Most people think taxes, spreadsheets, boxes, and forms to fill in, but really it's all about life choices. It's about moving house, starting a new job, and planning for the future. The Tax Compass podcast is now 1 year old. I can't quite believe it's that old, but it is 1 year old. So to mark the occasion, we've pulled together a few clips, a few stories to remember what we've done over the course of the last 12 months. You'll hear real client stories and real situations across lots of different scenarios. We want to make sure you pay the right tax in the right place at the right time. Welcome to the Tax Compass podcast, navigating UK tax for expats with LSR Partners. So first, for episode three, a real repatriation story, mine. You'll hear what it's like to come back after being away for a long time and how some small admin choices can sometimes make big tax impacts. So the backstory to why we moved to Japan was that I had been out to Asia on a business trip and I'd spent some time in Tokyo, which is an amazing place everyone should visit. And I sort of came back and was speaking to my boss about like, oh, there's huge opportunities in Japan and blah, 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 just sort of, you know, sort of telling him about my business trip. And then things happened and 4 months later, I was called into his office and it's like, how do you feel about going and running capital markets in Japan?
Obviously, you were out for 10 years, was it? Yeah. And then you came back to the UK. How did you find that? Obviously, in your instance, it was, I suppose, slightly unexpected in terms of the way that you repatriated.
That was the hardest bit of the whole thing, actually. The thing that was most difficult for us was we'd planned to come back for the kids to go to school. COVID sort of intervened. I ended up being stuck back here. I know Naz she found it very hard because she wasn't able to sort of say goodbye to people. And it's a very small thing compared to some of the awful things that happened to people during COVID. But it is that whole thing that like when you close a chapter, you want to close it properly. And we had an apartment in Singapore that sat empty for like nearly 2 years because we weren't sure whether we were coming or going or whatever. And that always makes it hard in terms of the sort of organizational side of it and also the mental side of saying, no, we're back in the UK and we're going to stick to the UK.
Yeah.
And that whole thing of it just being different in that sense was quite hard. We had a property that we kept and we were renting out. I'd done the classic thing that a lot of people do, which is to not really think about disclosing residency myself, even though it had been being done for me.
Yeah.
And then you get into the whole problem of, well, I can't do it through my government gateway because that doesn't allow non-residents to do tax returns. So it's like, well, I don't really want to have to pay for my own software. So I actually found you through Experts for Expats, where a lot of our clients still find us. Looking back on it, I think one of the... So I was given a tax departure thing when I left because I was on an expat thing. I think the one thing around tax that I realized, and even though I'm a chartered accountant and I had to do a load of tax exams, you sort of forget all the intricacies of it and not keeping sort of up to speed and au fait with the various different bits and pieces in terms of rules.
Yeah.
Was something I would ideally would have done better. I think in terms of coming back, all of those things still applied. I think one of the things that I just didn't really think about at all was the whole sort of residency gains. I had a share portfolio and it's like, you just don't think about, oh, I'm going to sell some shares. And suddenly coming back into the UK, you've got to think, oh goodness, like everything I do is going to have some sort of tax implication. So I'd need to be really careful about it. And then the final bit, I guess, is some of the stuff around reporting requirements with banks and financial institutions when you move. Those things are becoming quite onerous now with all this information sharing stuff, which is really ramped up. And like, you know, we've talked in the past about the fact that HMRC are really up on foreign income and gain investigations. It's one of their favorite areas to look at. And whilst I haven't been investigated by HMRC on that front, thank goodness, it is something to be mindful of. Now from episode four, pensions feel simple. Until you end up making over contributions and suddenly realize you haven't paid enough tax and it can lead to an HMRC disclosure. To put maybe some color around this in the real world, maybe I can just run through one of the recent case studies that we've dealt with where we were helping one of our clients to sort of set their affairs straight with HMRC because of
historic pension contributions that had unfortunately gone awry. She had been making significant pension contributions. We went back and we had a detailed look at her contributions over, I think, about 6 years, wasn't it? And to the way that the relief works, Laura mentioned about the fact that you can look back 3 years and bring contributions forward. And so if you think about how that would stagger, so, you know, in this year, you can go back 3 years. Next year, depending on what you've done this year, you might not have used up the third year, but then it disappears because you don't get it. And so you're constantly rolling forward year on year. And what had happened in her situation was that it just so happened that in the year she decided she'd got some spare money and wanted to put an extra bit of money into her pension, technically she didn't have the allowance that she thought she had because the third year had fallen away. And so then she, I think it was like 11,000, 12,000 quid over the limit. And so we then had to go to HMRC and do a disclosure to say that basically 4 years ago, she had over-contributed to her pension. She hadn't paid the pension savings tax charge. And as I say, from HMRC's perspective, they looked at it and said, that is effectively unpaid tax. And so there was, we tried to do it on the basis of no penalty. And in fact, recently they came back and said, no, we think there should be a penalty. Interest as well. And that's the problem. And what's slightly frustrating is that in terms of that disclosure, one of the points we made to HMRC was this is a complex area of taxation. And it seems a bit unfair when someone's actually realized only because we did some work for them on another topic and we picked up that there was a problem. They then come forward and said, actually, I want to try and set my affairs straight. Because the pension, I mean, sometimes pension funds pick it up. And we've had a couple of instances where we've had clients who've been contacted by their pension providers and saying, we think you owe a tax charge. But generally speaking, it's a pretty idiosyncratic and small area. But yeah, HMRC are always prepared to throw the book. I mean, that tends to be the way they operate, which is frustrating.
In this clip from episode 5, we talk about property. Property is always a bit more complicated than people think, and it can even come down to quality of occupation. So listen out for some of the real key things that can make a difference.
So there are various deemed periods where you can apply principal private residence relief. In terms of that, there are things like if you can have it up to 3 years for any reason. So if you've had to, I don't know, move out of the property for a short period and then you've moved back, you can have up to 4 years for absence as a result of working in the somewhere in the UK and needing to relocate for work purposes. There's also, if you can have any period of absence if you've had to relocate for work, but it's internationally.
And that's a really interesting one, right? Because
yes,
we actually had a case of a lady who had gone, I want to say at the end of the 90s, to South America.
Yes.
And she worked for various charitable organisations. I think some of them were like, you know, intergovernmental agencies, and had been going around. I think she'd been in Peru, in Chile. Really interesting. And finally ended up in Honduras, I think it was. And in fact, because she was going to come back to the UK and live in the property, and she'd only ever been outside because of work, or I think there's another one, isn't there, where you're the partner of a person who's got to be outside the UK for work.
Yes.
And she was actually in a situation of being able to claim an allowable absence for a period of 20 odd years.
Yes, but in her instance, she had moved back into the country. She was a UK tax resident at the time.
And that's very important, right? So you have to have moved back into the property.
Yeah.
And it could be a real problem. I was speaking to someone recently who had retired and wondered if, you know, he'd retired a year ago and had stayed in the country where he was and could he come back? And then it becomes very difficult. Whereas this lady had come straight back to the UK and moved straight back into the property.
Yes.
As soon as she was able to. And I guess the other interesting thing about that one was quite often people say to us, okay, but I'm moving back into the property. How long do I have to move back into it for? And so again, there's some interesting case law on this, isn't there, about what they call the quality of occupation?
Yes. Oh, gosh, yes. So it is really difficult because there is no prescription about how long you need to have spent in the property. It is about whether you are using the property as your home. You know, if it's all well and good saying, oh, it's my home and my post gets delivered here and this, that and the other. But if the reality is you're not living there, it's not your home. And it's, I suppose, if HMRC were to ever come and inquire into the situation, then it very much falls on you to be able to provide the evidence that it was used as your home and was set up as your home. But yeah, it's really not very clear in terms of whether HMRC consider or kind of how long you have to be there.
It's one of those things. It's that expression that it's required but not sufficient, where you have to move back into it. But it's not just a question of like, I've been in there for two nights, right, we're off.
Payroll is supposed to make everything easy with tax deducted at source. In this clip from episode 7, it shows that sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes you need to be in self-assessment to get refunds, especially if you're not in the UK but still on a UK payroll. There's very limited guidance in terms of really what you need to be doing. I was speaking to a client yesterday who's been in the UK since 2017 from the US. He's a US citizen, thinks he's taxed in the US on his US income. Had no real idea that he was also taxable in the UK, but wouldn't be double taxed. And it's like, he was like a senior executive. And it's like, for people like that, not realizing, and there's not really that much guidance. But at the same time, HMRC are so incompetent, frankly, when it comes to trying to sort out the number of people they've got. You're in this weird situation where at the moment we're seeing tons of nudge letters going out to people because they're desperate for more revenue, whilst at the same time trying to push people out of the tax return system. It is this element. I can't help but think it's this element of people going, or HMRC, it's like, how can we avoid having to give people tax refunds? How can we make it as opaque as possible as to what the situation really is?
To me, as somebody who's
less cynical.
Well, no, I'm with you on this particular point. Now, I've the past 12 months has been really interesting. It used to be a case of we need to get a tax refund for this reason, and you'd get a UTR, and they're really putting up resistance in a lot of instances where that is the case, which is just painful. And the thing is, and this is where
it's painful and wrong, because and that's what frustrates us a lot, right?
Yeah, I think as well, from our perspective, some of the other routes to obtaining a tax refund, your DT individual form,
obviously
R43 forms, etc., you submit them and they take months, if not potentially in some instances years, to deal with. Whereas you do a tax return self-assessment, you submit it, assuming that there is no reason for them. They might undertake additional security checks, but unless they do that, it's 2 to 4 weeks to get a refund. It goes straight into a bank account. Quite often with some of the other forms, you need to have checks. People living outside of the UK, like trying to get them a check, it's really difficult. And therefore, actually, the tax return system, because it's online, it's electronic, there's a process, it's a lot easier to do. So again, this is where it's really, really, it's just obstacles to get people sorted.
Yeah. So look, I guess the takeaway from this is it's really good, especially if you're coming into the UK, to get some advice as to what your position is likely to be and get ahead of it. Because to your point, you know, ultimately it's like saying to people, get in the tax return system, because then it gives you that ability to get refunds much quicker. And ultimately you can say, yeah, no, I'm going to have some income. I might be renting out a property to get a UTR, and then you've got them.
Yeah.
But like we had with some, and again, this is where I get really quite angry about it. It's like, you know, we've got a couple who are based in Barbados, they're pensioners. They put into the UK system, they work for the NHS, they retired, they shouldn't be being taxed on their NHS pensions. And HMRC are doing absolutely everything they can to avoid having to give them refunds. And that's just really, really bad, because it's like, well, hang on a minute. It's very straightforward that this isn't taxable in the UK. You've been withholding it. And again, when it comes to moving around countries, you know, a lot of people these days retire overseas for obvious reasons. And, you know, that whole business of sorting out payroll on pensions and all this sort of stuff, as you say, in the last 2 years, it does feel as if it's become noticeably worse, right?
Remote work has changed everything. Since COVID, so many people live abroad but work for UK companies. This story from episode 8 about working for the NHS abroad is an interesting one. Whose rules apply? And this really blew my mind when this came up. I remember getting a call a year and a half ago, and I was actually in Wolverhampton Hospital. Do you remember I had that eye problem?
Yeah.
And they've got an eye centre down there. Anyway, this person called me up, and of course I was stood in an NHS hospital, absolute pandemonium, usual story. And the person who called me, I had an initial meeting with them. They work for the NHS.
Yeah.
In South Wales. And they were a physiotherapist. I was like, oh, right. What are you? She said, oh, no, I'm resident in Spain. I do it remotely. It's like, you do physio remotely? And she was like, it's some special sort of physio or something. I don't know. But it was like, so you've got that system. You've got RTAT system. And then you've got the biggest employer in the UK, which happens to be a government entity, allowing people to work remotely from Spain and therefore not pay UK tax. The whole thing. But it's that whole thing that well, that feels a bit weird. Surely if you're a government employee, you know.
Yeah.
Surely you should change the rules so that's sourced to the UK or something.
Yeah.
But again, it's this whole point of there's been a real sea change for people being able to do their work remotely. We see so many people now who are moving overseas. They've still worked for a UK employer.
Yeah.
And then they go, well, actually, the UK employer is getting a bit worked up. I'll switch to being a contractor and all the rest. There are so many ways you can continue to basically do your job, but do it in a way that means you don't get caught up in paying into the wrong national insurance system or whatever it might be. And I do wonder whether the next thing we're going to see out of this government is a change to the way residency works. The number of people we know who are working remotely, so many of them are in service jobs. They're lawyers, they're people like us. I mean, like, ultimately, you and I could do what we do from anywhere. There's no reason for us to be in the UK to do it.
True.
That's a good idea. We'll come back to that. I think the issue you just are going to have is that, okay, we'll change the residency system. Is it time that, or are we heading towards a time where the statutory residency test gets changed?
And staying on episode 8, policy choices from government can really make big differences. In this little clip, there's a really interesting story about the impact of government policy on high-end restaurants in London. There's been a lot of stuff in the media recently about the so-called, well, it's not the so-called, it is called the Laffer Curve. And it really does feel that we're at that point. The Office for Budget Responsibility has said that they think over this parliament, the capital gains tax take is going to be £31 billion lower than they thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Because the rates went up. Because people, the thing with income is you can't not get income if you're in a job. So it's very hard to change your tax. But if you're in capital gains tax areas, it's like, well, I'm just not going to sell the asset and then it's not going to crystallise.
Or I'm going to leave the UK and
exactly
crystallize it outside.
Yeah, I think I really do see this becoming a real albatross around the government's neck. And you know, the maybe the interesting one to sort of sign off with on this, and another good anecdote. There's a restaurant in London called Hakkasan, which is a high-end Chinese restaurant. And I was talking to a mate of mine who actually works for a guy who's been in the paper recently for exactly this thing of leaving the UK and going and trying to be resident somewhere else. And he was saying that Hakkasan had to shut down one of their restaurants in Mayfair, and in their other one, they've had to close the floor, because all their clients have gone, and these are non-dom people who've just upstairs and off they've gone.
Yeah.
And so it just really does feel that it's going to be so interesting, isn't it? Because like, obviously the thing to do is to get rid of the new system and go back to the old system, or manipulate the new system so that you give people longer and all the rest of it.
Yep.
But I guess politically that's going to be impossible for this government.
I'd say so.
In this clip from episode 9, we talk about something that's hit the news headlines recently, stamp duty land tax. Gifting property can work, but you have to make sure you get it right. If there's a mortgage in there, it can cause real problems, or if there are underage children.
We have a client who's, they live in Switzerland, I think, yeah, don't they? And he's looking at optimizing his portfolio. He's got two properties in the UK. And he's recently got married, thinking about gifting it, part of the property, to his spouse, which will obviously be outside the scope of capital gains tax from his perspective.
Yes.
It's not quite as simple as that when it comes to stamp duty, is it?
No. So from a stamp duty perspective, HMRC will look at what the monetary value of the
transfer is.
So if you owned the property outright...
Yes, the consideration, isn't it?
Yes. So if you owned the property outright, there's no consideration. If it was fully gifted, there was no transfer of cash. If, however, there's a mortgage outstanding on the property, then there is going to be some consideration as far as HMRC are concerned.
Yeah, so they'll treat... So again, example, you have a house worth 500 grand. It's got a mortgage of 300 grand on it. You gift half the property to your spouse. From a stamp duty perspective, the consideration would be 150,000, which is 50% of the mortgage, on the basis that the spouse would end up having to take on the liability for the mortgage, because otherwise the mortgage company wouldn't allow the transfer.
Yes.
And that's probably important to note to people, because we often get this question, and we'll come on to talk a little bit about trust deeds that can change beneficial ownership in a moment. But if you're transferring legal ownership, you will have to make sure, and the mortgage company will know you've done it, because you'll have to change the title deeds at the land registry, and the mortgage company obviously have a charge and they would have to sign it off.
Yes.
And so then if you're doing that, you might end up with an unexpected SDLT bill because of that transfer, provided it's, and they've just dropped the rates again, haven't they, down to 125,000 is the lower end of it. It was 250,000 up until the 1st of April, when the government changed it and cut it in half.
Yes.
So yeah, that's an important one, because we sometimes get clients, don't we, who think, oh, this is a clever way of reducing down my liability of one sort or another, or they're thinking inheritance tax, and then suddenly it's like, oh no, I've created a significant stamp duty charge.
Yes.
Staying with episode 9, this clip talks about personal allowances and how you can make the most of ensuring across couples you get the most benefit. We've got clients who live in China. One's British, one's Chinese. The British partner gets, or spouse gets, a personal allowance. The Chinese one doesn't.
Yep.
A really simple, super easy tax thing for them is change the beneficial ownership to make sure the husband's using up all of his personal allowance.
Yeah.
Because he's non-resident, whatever he might be earning in China doesn't get taxed in the UK, so it's not a relevant thing. But to be in a situation where you leave some personal allowance on the table and then the wife had a tax bill is just a simple one to solve, right?
It is. It is. But again, unfortunately, nothing can be done retrospectively.
In this clip from episode 10, we talk about, whilst rates might not change, the fact that they don't increase allowances means that fiscal drag pulls more people into tax. Add that to national insurance increases for employers, and really, employment tax has gone up. I saw a stat the other day saying that by the end of this period, something like 8 million people will have been dragged into a higher rate tax bracket. And so it's actually a really sneaky way of governments increasing the tax take, whilst also being able to say to people, we're not changing the tax rates.
Yeah, and I think that's it. They call it a sneak tax, don't they? Because yes, from a government perspective, they're in a position to be able to say, we're not increasing the rates, we're not increasing anything, we're just leaving it as it is. And as you say, with inflationary increases on wages, if nothing else, like more and more people's wages are going to be increased and going into higher tax brackets.
I think the other big change that came in at the start of this year was, of course, the change to employers' national insurance.
Yes. So that has gone up from 13.8% to 15%, which I suppose, just as a headline figure, is going to be an increase. But the biggest increase element of it was the rate that it kind of kicks in from. I think it reduced down... I can't remember where it was, whether it's about 9,000 or something beforehand, but it's kind of...
It's down to 5,000 now, I think.
Down to 5,000. They increased the employer's allowance. So for smaller businesses that have a smaller number of employees, they might end up in a similar, if not even possibly slightly better off position as a result of those changes. But for your bigger companies who have significant number of employees who are maybe minimum wages, that is going to...
Really
hit them significantly, and I suppose you might expect to see the the recruitment marketplace or...
Well, it already has. I mean, there's a lot of evidence to say that recruiting at the moment is at its lowest rate for years. And that's certainly going to be one of the factors.
And finally, from episode 6, this is a real life story about how tax can really make a difference. Tax treaties aren't just bits of paper between governments. They can make real life differences and really give you time back.
I was speaking to a client yesterday who lives in Germany. He also sort of lives in the UK. His employer thinks he works from the UK, but he actually sort of works from Germany. Yeah. And he was very worked up about whether or not he should be a UK tax resident, a non-UK tax resident. And one of the things that was interesting, sort of talking him through the way the system works, is you can end up being resident in both, and then you look at the tax treaty to determine who taxes what. And then you do the same thing as well, even if you're only resident in one. If in his situation, for example, he was working for a UK employer, but working from Germany, the UK will always have taxing rights when he's in the UK, and then Germany will have taxing rights when he's in Germany. And then it's a question of how you sort that out to make sure you're not being double taxed.
Yes. So I think when it comes to tax residents, and certainly in the UK, we look at the statutory residence test to determine whether you're considered to be UK tax resident or not. And that's regardless of what's going on with any sort of double tax treaties in your tax residence position in another country.
And that's what we term domestically resident, right?
Yes.
And so often we have people, what do you mean by domestically resident? It's that whole thing of saying, well, you're resident in the UK under the UK's own rules before you've looked at anybody else's rules.
From a UK perspective, you can be considered non-resident by the domestic rules. You can be considered resident by the domestic rules, and then you can, I suppose, be resident per the domestic rules, but then also treaty non-resident in the UK, because per the terms of a double tax treaty, you're actually considered to be tax resident in the other country. And again, looking through potentially a set of tiebreakers, it's determined that you're considered to be treaty resident somewhere else.
I guess the way I quite like to finish it though is with a moment of brightness. And that's in relation to a client that we had a couple of years ago, who was coming to the UK regularly to look after her mum. She herself was retired, and I think her mum was probably in her 90s. And she had got herself into a terrible stew about becoming UK tax resident and what that mean. All of her income was generated out of the US, wasn't it? And she got like pensions and savings and all the rest of it. And we were able to do the treaty analysis for her and work out that whatever she did, she was going to be treaty resident in the US. And it essentially gave her carte blanche to spend time with her mum, who was sort of moving towards sort of end of life.
Yeah.
And I have to say that from my perspective, so often we deal with people, like when it comes to like investigations and all that sort of stuff, where it's all a bit tense and people get quite stressed for obvious reasons. Being able to give someone that news that she could then spend time with her mum was really good, wasn't it? Because and it's nice to think the treaties can work that way to sort of sort people out.
Yeah, definitely.
If these stories sound familiar, that's because they're about real life. It's not just about textbooks and tax codes. Whether you're moving house, whether you're starting a new job, whether you're moving country, getting the tax right really does make a difference. When you understand the rules and you understand how they apply to you, you get clarity and confidence. If you need help with your particular tax situation, make sure you contact LSR Partners to ensure that you pay the right tax in the right place at the right time. If you found this interesting and helpful, please do take the time to leave a review and subscribe so more people can find us. Thanks for listening to the Tax Compass podcast brought to you by LSR Partners, where we help you pay the right tax in the right place at the right time. Book a call with us. Details are in the show notes.